Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to this Amdocs first quarter 2014 earnings release conference call. Today's conference is being recorded and webcast. At this time, I will turn the call over to Ms. Elizabeth Grossman. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Shannon. Before we begin, I would like to point out that during this call, we will discuss certain financial information that is not prepared in accordance with GAAP. The company's management uses this financial information in its internal analysis in order to exclude the effect of acquisitions and other significant items that may have a disproportionate effect in a particular period. Accordingly, management believes that isolating the effects of such events enables management and our investors to consistently analyze the critical components and results of operations of the company's business and to have a meaningful comparison to prior periods. For more information regarding our use of non-GAAP financial measures, including reconciliations of these measures, we refer you to today's earnings release, which will also be furnished with the SEC on Form 6-K. Also, this call includes information that constitutes forward-looking statements. Although we believe the expectations reflected in such forward-looking statements are based upon reasonable assumptions, we can give no assurance that our expectations will be obtained or that any deviations will not be material. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause future results to differ from those anticipated. These risks include, but are not limited to, the effects of general economic conditions and such other risks as discussed in our earnings release today and at greater length in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including in our annual report on Form 20-F for the fiscal year ended September 30th, 2013, filed on December 9th, 2013. Amdocs may elect to update these forward-looking statements at some point in the future. However, the company specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. Participating on the call today with me are Eli Gellman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs Management Limited, and Tamar Rapaport-Dagim, Chief Financial Officer. Before I hand the call over to Eli, I would like to let our investors and analysts know that Matt Smith, our Director of Investor Relations, who most of you know very well, will assume primary leadership for the investor relations group following this quarter. I will be shifting more of my focus to the corporate strategy team, which I've had the pleasure of leading for the past 3 years, but look forward to still speaking with you frequently in that capacity. With that, I will turn it over to Eli.
Thank you, Liz, and good afternoon to anyone joining us on the call today. We are pleased to report that we made a solid start to fiscal 2014, with revenues, profitability, and non-GAAP earnings per share consistent with our expectations. We delivered year-over-year growth across North America, Europe, and emerging markets. We maintain a keen focus on operating execution and efficiency, and we utilize our free cash flow to both close strategic acquisitions and return cash to shareholders. With this performance, we are on track to deliver on our guidance for diluted non-GAAP earnings per share growth of 6% to 9% year-over-year in fiscal 2014. Let me now add some regional color to the company activity during the first quarter. Beginning with North America, we are pleased to report another quarter of strong growth. 2 quarters ago, we highlighted a renewed level of competition amongst North American wireless providers. This has continued to support demand for our products and services as we partner with our key accounts to refine and execute their strategic initiatives. With respect to our outlook, we are still subject to lingering uncertainty in the North American market on two fronts. First, we have consistently discussed the many moving parts resulting from the consolidation activity in the North American wireless market. This not only includes uncertainties arising from the M&A completed in calendar 2013, but extends to the potential for additional acquisition activity among North American carriers, the outcome of which are difficult to predict. We continue to work with our customers to help them in their post-merger integration planning, but we are still in a certain degree of uncertainty on how awards of new business will progress due to these factors. Taking this into consideration, our 2014 outlook reflects various scenarios which we believe could play out in the coming quarters, but clearly we cannot account for all possible outcomes. Second, we are seeing early indication that the pay TV industry in North America may be at the cusp of consolidation. Until the outlook begins to resolve, this type of uncertainty can result in relatively cautious discretionary spending of these customers. This activity, however, does support our long-held view that the pay TV industry is likely to transform as it respond to rapidly changing competitive dynamics in the video line of business. Our offering strategy in the multi-play and pay TV is directly targeted at capturing the opportunities presented by these trends. Moving to Europe, we delivered year-over-year growth for the first time since fourth quarter of fiscal 2012. Difficult macroeconomics and regulatory conditions persist in Europe and continue to present challenges to the region's carriers. It is therefore too early to say whether our strong Q1 performance represents the beginning of an improving trend, although we do see opportunities for long-term growth in Europe. Recent activities in the quarter included Vodafone Group, where we added another regional affiliate to the Global Managed Services Agreement during the quarter, and EE, a leading mobile operator in the UK, where we were selected to deploy our MVNE solution under a managed services contract. Turning finally to the emerging markets, quarterly revenue trends continue to exhibit lumpiness, owing primarily to the project orientation of our customer engagements. We are confident in our ability to execute on these highly complex transformation projects, and we focused on enhancing our competitive position in these regions. Let me take a moment to briefly elaborate. First, we continue to strengthen our relationship at strategic accounts. During the first quarter, we formalized our partnership with one of Asia-Pacific leading pay TV providers by signing a 5-year managed services agreement that includes components of new development. At another strategic account in the region, we further expanded our penetration by deploying MDoc's MVNE solution as part of our long-term contract. Second, in the CALA region, towards the end of the first fiscal quarter, we completed a niche but strategic acquisition of a small Latin American IT service company. This acquisition accelerates our existing workforce in North America, in Latin America, and helps to expand our penetration in the region. Overall, we believe the long-term drivers in this emerging markets region remains highly favorable, and MDoc is strategically well-placed to execute against the rich pipeline of opportunities we see ahead. Looking forward, we believe we can deliver full-year total revenue growth of 5-8% in fiscal 2014, which is slightly ahead of our original guidance. The change is primarily due to the timing and performance of recently acquired assets. As noted in our press release, we completed the acquisition of SalesSight on January 1st, and the post-merger integration with Actix is underway. These acquisitions are a good demonstration of our execution in a new strategic domain, which has been under review for over a year prior to announcing the deals. Both companies secured new customers' wins during quarter one. We anticipate additional success over the longer term as we realize the benefits and the synergies of an integrated network software effort under MDoc. With respect to our core business, we would like to remind you of the many moving parts in our outlook, particularly in light of the increasing level of industry consolidation amongst North American carriers. We believe we're executing well, but the current conditions do introduce a level of uncertainties for our customers and therefore for MDoc. I would like to reemphasize that we remain committed to returning cash to shareholders over the long term. During Q1, we executed on our share repurchase program at levels above the one suggested by our 50-50 framework. We will likely maintain a similar approach in the second fiscal quarter. Taking all these factors into consideration, we remain comfortable with our non-GAAP earnings per share growth outlook of 6-9% in fiscal year 2014. Finally, I would like to remind you that our board approved increasing our quarterly cash dividend payment by 19% to 15.5 cents per quarter. This increased dividend, if it is approved at tomorrow's annual general meeting of shareholders, will be paid in April. With that, I would turn the call over to Tamar.
Thank you, Eli.
First fiscal quarter revenue of $864 million was within our guidance range of $845 to $875 million, with a positive impact from foreign currency fluctuations of approximately $2 million relative to the fourth fiscal quarter of 2013. The revenue includes a negligible impact from the acquisition of a small Latin American IT service provider, which closed within the last days of the quarter. Our first fiscal quarter non-GAAP operating margin was 16.8%, an increase of 10 basis points compared with the fourth fiscal quarter of 2013, and within our target range of 16 to 17%. Below the operating line, net interest and other expense was $1 million in Q1. For forward-looking purposes, we continue to expect a net expense in the range of a few million dollars quarterly due to foreign currency fluctuations. Diluted non-GAAP EPS was 76 cents in Q1 compared to our guidance range of 72 to 78 cents. Free cash flow was robust at $160 million in Q1. This was comprised of cash flow from operations of approximately $187 million, less $27 million in net capital expenditures in other. As usual, we anticipate free cash flow in the second fiscal quarter will be lower due to the timing of annual bonus payments. DSO of 72 days decreased by 1 day quarter over quarter. Total unbilled receivables rose by $7 million as compared to the fourth fiscal quarter of 2013. Our total deferred revenue, both short-term and long-term, increased by $20 million sequentially in Q1. These changes are consistent with normal fluctuations in these items. Our cash balance at the end of first fiscal quarter was approximately $1.2 billion. Please note that this balance does not reflect the acquisition of SalesSight, which closed on January 1st for cash consideration of $141 million. Our 12-month backlog, which includes anticipated revenue related to contracts, estimated revenue for managed services contracts, letters of intent, maintenance, and estimated ongoing support activities, was $2.89 billion at the end of first fiscal quarter, up $20 million sequentially. During the first fiscal quarter, we repurchased $84 million of our ordinary shares under our current $500 million authorization plan. We had $252 million remaining under this authorization as of December 31st. Now turning to our outlook, we expect revenue to be within a range of $880 to $910 million for the second fiscal quarter of 2014. Our guidance incorporates a full quarter of revenue contribution from our recently completed acquisitions of SalesSight and the Latin American IT service provider. We anticipate minimal sequential impact from foreign currency fluctuations as compared to Q1. Translating our second quarter to the full fiscal year, we now expect total revenue growth in the range of 5 to 8% on a constant currency and reported basis. This compares with our previously guided annual range of 4 to 8% growth. The difference is mostly attributable to the performance of recently acquired assets, as well as the timing of M&A deal closing. As reflected in our outlook, we anticipate that our overall sequential revenue growth rates will moderate in the second half of the fiscal year. Also within the full year outlook, and consistent with our prior expectations, we still anticipate revenue from our directory business in fiscal 2014 to decrease in the double-digit percentage range, placing about a 1% drag on the total company results. We anticipate our non-GAAP operating margin for fiscal 2014 to continue to be within our long-term target range of 16 to 17%. We also expect our non-GAAP effective tax rates to be in the range of 13 to 15% for fiscal 2014. We expect the second fiscal quarter non-GAAP EPS to be in a range of 75 to 81 cents. Our second fiscal quarter non-GAAP EPS guidance also incorporates an expected average diluted share count of roughly 163 million shares and the likelihood of a negative impact from foreign exchange fluctuations in net interest and other expense. We excluded the impact of incremental future share buyback activity during the second fiscal quarter, as the level of activity will depend on market conditions. Factoring in our second quarter outlook for the full fiscal year, We are on track to deliver on our guidance for non-GAAP EPS growth of 6%-9% in fiscal year 2014. With that, we can turn it back to the operator to begin our question and answer session.
Operator?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal time to reach our equipment. We do ask that you limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. Again, please press star one to ask a question, and we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We first go to Ashwin Shirvaikar with Citi. Please go ahead.
Thank you, guys, and congratulations on the quarter.
Thank you.
The sales momentum, which actually is where my question is. With regards to these new deals that you announced for mobile network optimization, could you provide some incremental information with regards to the nature of these deals in terms of, just say, average size, duration, the license versus services breakout, things like that? Talk about the upcoming pipeline as well, if you could.
Sure, Ashwin. Thank you for the question. In terms of some color around these deals, first of all, the topic or the space of RAN optimization, radio access network optimization, have been on our agenda for quite some time. It's just that eventually managed to find the right assets, and we completed these deals. The nature of these deals are relatively different from the one you expect on BSS transformation or even OSS transformation project. Usually, each one of the deals are relatively small, could be in the $1 million, $2 million, $3 million each. Usually, the tendency is to augment it with additional projects. Now, in some cases, you will see a company streamlining around an ACTx product, for example, for 3G optimization, 3G network optimization, and they will then pay a different or subsequent license for the 4G or LTE. That could be something different from small cells and different technologies. Same goes about the regions. It usually could be per segment of markets or subset of markets. That's kind of the trend with the ACTx product. With the sales side, it's similar, but on the services side. Usually we provide optimization services around sales side tools, and now we're combining it with the ACTx infrastructure product, but we'll basically offer the services to a certain market or sub-market for a certain technology, sometimes certain network equipment providers. It could be 3G of Ericsson in market X versus 4G of ALU in market Y, and so on and so forth. The nature of these deals are that they are incremental. These companies have a tendency to do a very good job, and therefore, we believe that we can see subsequent sales once you get into a carrier or into a certain market, and it can repeat itself. That's kind of to give you a feeling for the type of activities. The end result is that we are saving a lot of money to the operators in running more efficiently the networks. Now, what we are doing as we speak in integrating these companies together and into Amdocs BSS, is we are connecting this network optimization software and services into the BSS and allowing a better customer experience, if you will, by providing a better network to in any given region or coverage or and even connecting it to the amount of money that is associated with good or bad or in between networks. or not so good network. So you can estimate the effect of the impact on your customers. So kind of this is kind of to give you a glimpse of that as we move forward. Probably will provide more data and more information so you'd understand better the assets and how they work separately and with the rest of the company.
Okay, great. Now that's very useful, Eddie. I guess just a clarification. Now that the sell side deal is closed, those numbers they should be in the guidance, right? And what's the breakout of acquisition versus organic?
So the numbers for Q2 and for the year as a whole include already full second quarter with the sell side and the small IT service provider we acquired in Latin America. In terms of the breakout, as we said in the beginning of the year, we expected around 2 to 3% coming from acquired assets. Now we are seeing a slightly better picture, especially given A, timing of closing of such deals, and B, the fact that we see better performance in conjunction with the fact that the IT service provider in Latin America was not baked into the original guidance of the year. So you should expect a slightly better performance from the acquired assets relative to this 2 to 3%.
But it didn't change the full year. I mean, it didn't change the overall.
That's on the full year, yeah. We're not guiding on a quarter-by-quarter basis now, breaking out the acquired assets. We start the integration day one. We start moving forward and including that as part of our portfolio and suite of products moving forward.
So you can basically do the pro rata on the quarterly basis, but maybe the one comment I would like to add is that I expect all these acquisitions, including the IT company in Latin America and Actix and Sellside, to be blended so quickly into the rest of the company that it will be very hard for us even to, within very few quarters, to really identify where does the, you know, old companies start and where does the rest of the MDOX continue.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ashwin.
And next we go to David Kaplan with Barclays.
Hi, this is Chris on for David. The recent announcement by AT&T around both the connected car and sponsored data seemed to point to a pickup of two long-term themes that you've talked about, including M2M and monetization of data. Do you expect any or either of these to have an impact on revenues in fiscal year 14?
So Chris, it's a very good question. First of all, we are part of this trend in the industry in North America and elsewhere. These deals in general are not huge in the beginning. We believe it will be a trend, it will grow. So this size of projects are baked into the overall numbers and they are not changing, moving the needles that significantly. On the other hand, it is exciting because people were talking about, you know, the telco getting into the connected cars and the connected homes and security and machine-to-machine in general for quite some time, and now we could start seeing it, especially in North America, but not only. And it's in the U.S., AT&T announced it. You know, Rogers in Canada is doing something slightly different with the security in, as an offering. And you can see different permutation of the same concept. So we are part of it. Our product are very relevant, our services as well. But in terms of the size of it, I wouldn't try to depict it as something that can change the guidance. It is basically baked in the overall numbers and it's in there. For now, I mean, if it will accelerate dramatically, maybe 2015 will be different.
Okay, and if I could just another question on the spend in cable vertical. Do you see those customers making move to BSS, OSS solutions from vendors? And is this an area that you consider for M&A activity?
So on the pay TV, which is cable and satellite and IPTV, or any permutation of that, I would imagine you will see all the different scenarios that we have known. I think that, yes, they will go out to buy, you know, BSS system, an OSS system, and upgrades to legacy. They haven't done it for a long time, but I can also see a lot of homegrown development or home sponsored development in some cases. And I would imagine that every one of these MSOs would have just a different view for that. Now, that's on the space of BSS and OSS, and some of it will be delivery projects, some of it will be or what we call projects, some of it will be managed services. So again, you will see different scenarios in different places. But what we are trying to depict in the script is that we just see the beginning of some of these activities. Now, in terms of our capabilities, in the space of BSS and OSS, most likely we don't need M&As, but we're looking also at extending our capabilities in the video space, into areas that might require some new technology, and then we may go after acquisition. I'm not obviously referring to a capability. We're not obviously referring to acquisition that are for expanding market share or stuff like this. I'm talking about acquisition that may augment our offering. And again, BSS, OSS, we don't need any. If we'll move into additional components of the video space in general, we may need to or want to accelerate with M&A.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Bye-bye.
And we next go to Paul Thomas with Goldman Sachs.
Hi, guys. This is Jack Charles on behalf of Paul Thomas. Congrats on the quarter. I guess the first place I'd like to dig into a little bit of your regional growth dynamics. So with Europe, previously you'd mentioned that you were in the process of getting by some large client resets. And I guess, can you give us an update on how that that's progressing?
It wasn't necessarily a large client reset at the time. It was just a natural ramp down of a transformation project that was running, part of the regular cycle that once you pass the peak of the transformation project, you move forward and go through more of an ongoing support mode. But having said that, the pickup we're seeing right now is a combination of several factors. One would be the Vodafone activity around the managed services deal that we announced. We are ramping up the responsibility we're having around the affiliates we already announced in the past, such as Germany and Netherlands, as well as the UK. We also talked now about an additional regional affiliate we have won as part of this frame agreement. And in addition to Vodafone, we had more activities around different examples. We talked about, for example, Everything Everywhere adopting our MVNE solution.
EE,
yeah. Adopting our MVNE solution. And there were other things going on in the region as well.
Okay.
The factory came more cautious about the sequential trends. Moving forward, is still this region is facing some challenges from the overall macroeconomic and regulatory pressures, as well as the fact that our own business in Europe is still heavily relying on project activity, which is a bit more lumpy in nature.
Okay, great. And then I guess in the emerging markets, can you maybe give us some color on whether this blip in 1Q, should we expect you to make that up in the remainder of the year? Or is it kind of going to maybe drag a little bit on the whole of fiscal 2014?
So we continue to hold a positive view on our growth opportunities in emerging markets, both in terms of the different themes in the marketplace that drive investment with the service providers, customer experience becoming a very major theme, for example, the whole notion of moving into triple play, quadruple play, different aspects that actually coincide with our philosophy and our portfolio of offerings into the market. At the same time, we are running several, or many, I would say, projects in parallel in the regions of emerging markets, both in Latin America and Southeast APAC, which are have their own pattern in terms of execution, timelines and deliverables according to the customer's appetite and program, which may create some fluctuations on a quarter-to-quarter basis. But the vector itself, in terms of how we see the business momentum both within fiscal 14 and a longer term, remains very healthy.
Okay, great. And then finally, given that you raised sales guidance on acquisitions but not EPS guidance, could you discuss what you're seeing in terms of accretion from the deals and when you might expect to see more immediate accretion impact on the bottom line?
So as we said in the beginning of the year, the acquisitions are actually modestly accretive on the EPS. The fact we are more optimistic right now on top line and not translating it directly into the EPS growth expectations is primarily because of the share price change that is impacting the share count. The share price has gone up in the recent few months in a way that is impacting the calculations of the expected share count. And we just taken into consideration that this is a bit of an offset to the fundamentals looking better.
Just to make sure that it's clear, we don't have any complaints about the share price going up. Jake, I would just like to add to what Tamar said about Europe. What you see in Europe is actually an interesting phenomenon that we are making progress with a galaxy like what we call a galaxy like Vodafone. Okay, so it's a long time to sign a contract with the Vodafone headquarter and corporate in England, and then you need to repeat the same process and winning the hearts and minds of Vodafone Germany or Vodafone UK or Vodafone Netherlands or what have you. And we see progress with that. This quarter specifically, we signed another one. But that's one trend that you see. We have similar trends with Deutsche Telekom on our policy product that we implemented. We signed a contract with a corporate, and then we implemented in certain affiliates, and now I think it's about 6 or 7 affiliates already of Deutsche Telekom all across Europe are using the same policy, standardizing on Amdocs at a certain component of their business. But not less encouraging is the fact that you see some business that we announced, you know, in Luxembourg or in Telekom Austria, A1 in Austria and in other places. So you see kind of variety of different businesses, and the combination of those are encouraging, and also the fact that some of them are managed services, some of them are very advanced technology, and some of them are turbocharging applications. So you see variety of solutions, which again give some signs of better business in Europe, but we don't want to be carried away, not in Europe, not in any other region.
And next we go to Jason Kupferberg with Jefferies.
Hi, this is Amit Singh for Jason. Just going back to Europe real quick. I mean, this quarter, the revenue growth was, of course, good. Just wanted to check how much of that was benefited by, you know, how much did the recent acquisition benefit the growth in Europe? And also, the new deals that you talk about in Europe, how are they ramping up, just so that we have a sense of how the revenue growth is going to be over the next few quarters?
So the impact on Q1 sequential performance in Europe was a combination of the core activity as well as some contribution coming from Actix. I would say the smaller part of the growth was the M&A. It's actually the larger part was the core activities of Amdocs. There was as well some positive impact quarter over quarter from currencies that impact that, but in a small amount. And in general, we are seeing the ramp up of the deals that we have in Europe just on plan, moving forward in terms of both onboarding additional responsibilities we took over as part of the managed services. I think the another proof point to the satisfaction overall of the group from the progress we are seeing in this execution is the fact we were awarded another regional affiliate this quarter. So we feel comfortable that we're moving on plan there.
Great. And just one more thing. AT&T recently ruled out the Vodafone bid. So I just wanted to check how much of, you know, future sort of growth, if this deal were to happen, you know, how much of future growth was incorporated into your views earlier? And do you see any sort of hiccup in spending from AT&T because of this deal not going through?
So, Hamid, this is a very good question. I'm not sure we have a good answer for that. Everybody's trying to analyze this deal. I'll start with the fact that we do not bake any future growth in Vodafone, for example, because of, you know, tailwind that we may potentially get from AT&T acquisition, because it may happen or may not happen. It's not in our FY14 numbers. We assume some kind of business as usual. The second thing I will tell you is that, you know, I think that what is happening is AT&T keep all its options open. They had to answer to the regulatory authorities in Europe, and that means that they would not do anything in the next 28 days, and it does mean that they would not solicit in the next few months, but it does not mean that they cannot do it if they elect to do it. And obviously, you know, they would do whatever they need to do for their own shareholders. We don't think right now that it will affect AT&T activity in North America per se. North America is very, as we also alluded in the script, is very dynamic. Some of it is creating uncertainties for us, and we are not crazy about it, but this is the nature of you know, of a lot of consolidations. But it also means that the North American market is very competitive. I don't see AT&T, regardless if they do this move or not, losing their focus on North America. So if they would do it, eventually we'll have probably maybe new activities in Vodafone, but as we said all along, we have a growing business with Vodafone as is right now, and we don't plan on any of that. If it will happen, we'll start analyzing it. It's one of these things that is so up in the air until it happens. And when it happens, it might be positive.
And next we go to Shaul Eyal with Oppenheimer.
Thank you. Hi. Good afternoon, everybody. Good quarter guidance. Apologies in advance if my question was asked already. Ellie, how's the status within the Latin American carrier, the wins from the past 18, 24 months, and thinking about those going forward, the possibility of those becoming Galaxy customers down the road?
So, you know, we don't provide information that might cause some of our customers, you know, some anxiety. And you can understand that there are very few, very large galaxies in Latin America. Namely two or three of them, okay? If you follow all of our announcements, you would probably be able to connect the dots and see that we are fairly active with all of them in different levels, and what we are doing, in what stage, implementation, strategy, and so on and so forth. It's actually very sensitive in this market, so we cannot tell you that we are doing, you know, country X with carrier Y, because that's quite significant information for the competition there. In general, I would say that We are making progress, significant progress. Depends on the quarter. It's a little bit lumpy, but altogether, the general direction in Latin America is very positive. Projects are sizable, complex. You know, the stuff that we know how to do, and others do not. And I will tell you that the acquisition that of this little, small IT shop would help us to accelerate our growth there. In terms of, these are people that are within our domain expertise. They are in the region. They speak the language. They have already, bases there, and it also may help with some of the customers that in the region. So, altogether, I'm bullish on Latin America.
Thank you very much. That is very helpful.
Thank you, Shaul.
And next we go to Tom Roderick with Stifel. Please go ahead.
Hey guys, good afternoon. So Ellie, first question for you, just in terms of maybe a follow-up to Ashwin's question earlier about the recent acquisitions on the network optimization side. Can you talk a little bit more about what you're doing to integrate the respective sales forces as you do work the Actix and CellSite acquisitions into your business? And maybe more importantly around that, what is happening to their pipelines as you put, you know, your balance sheet and reputation and brand and customer set behind it? Is it accelerating any new opportunities, making opportunities that they might have otherwise had bigger? Maybe talk a little bit about that process as it seems to be going perhaps even a little better than expected.
So Tom, thank you very much for the question. Look, first of all, in terms of the way we're organizing it, I would share with you that by and large, we created a business unit that will deal with this type of business, the especially the network optimization and the derivatives of this space. It's slightly more complex than we can explain today. Maybe in the analyst day we can go through to greater details. But the task of this business unit is actually combining tools from CellSite and know-how and services with Actix products on one hand, that's kind of on the product and the offering stand side, then connecting this entire thing to Amdocs, BSS, and OSS. That's on one aspect. The other component of integration is about the sales. We are actually trying to create eventually one sales force. It wouldn't happen in the next couple of weeks, but it will probably happen in the next couple of quarters. We are careful there just to make sure that we are not slowing down each one of these units for sake of clarity and organization and stuff like this. We don't want to confuse, activities with achievements. So, the third thing is that we think that we see already, but it's a very short period, so we don't want to say it's a trend, but I think we see already the pipeline in general improving because of the presence of Amdocs. We have a very strong presence all around the world. We are a known brand, and it definitely helps these younger companies to use our brand for their sake. On the other hand, you need to remember that in the beginning, you have all kind of adjustment you need to make. Just to give you an idea, Actix product was so good that some of the NEPs use them underneath the hood, selling them as a white label. So needless to say that some of these NEPs are not our friends and we're not going to continue with that. So you may think about the fact that you may have some adjustments, but in general, I think that the pipeline will improve and the response of the customers, which is the most important thing, is very, very positive to both acquisition and in the general, the next direction is of Amdocs. We're getting a lot of support from our customers once they understand the acquisition and what we are trying to do with it and so on and so forth. So altogether, we think we are on track or a little bit better than the track.
Great. Thank you, Ellie. Tamar, a quick follow-up question for you just in terms of the margin structure. Continuing to drift towards the high end of your 16-17% range, what would it take for the margins to break out above 17%? Is that something that you could see happening in the next few years? Is there something structural that would have to happen from a pricing standpoint or investment standpoint? Or do you think this is kind of the appropriate range to think about, not just for the immediate future, but sort of the midterm as well?
So when we talked about this as the long-term range, we talked about, 13 through fiscal 15 at the time. We have not changed our view about this as being the range that is applicable. Having the combination of, on the one hand, the very good momentum we are seeing in terms of win rate and in terms of the acceptance of the market of our offering, and at the same time our expansion in so many new directions, both on a regional perspective and as well as the type of offerings we come to the market with, we feel this is a good balance to be in, a very healthy range that can support both the healthy operational margins as well as growth opportunities we see in front of us. And of course, under the hood, to generate this kind of performance, we go through many cost efficiency programs to the company, continue to focus on how we are managing our cost of labor from a global perspective, as well as other elements that impact our cost structure. Because, as we said in the past, we assume that over time, customers continue to expect more for the same price, and we work under this inception moving forward as well.
And Tom, maybe I can add another angle to that. We don't really run the company by this number. We are really running a very tight ship in terms of, the operation and efficiency and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, you have to remember that we are still, and more so today than a year ago, living in a very, very challenging environment. We have competitors which are very, very big names. The fact that they cannot catch up with us to the large extent does not mean that they are not very aggressive. Some of them are getting aggressive as aggressive as to the level of becoming a non-rational competitors. So that's on one hand. On the second hand. There are not that many transformational projects, and we're trying to win the larger part of them, but obviously we don't have a 100% win rate. And we never promised that, and probably will never have that. So we need to remember that we need to feed the sales machine, and I want to have this ability to win projects for the long term. If I run the company by this parameter, it might jeopardize some other activities. And on top of it, don't forget that we are coming up with a lot of new offerings, a lot of activities in the company, penetration into regions, countries, so on and so forth, and offering in terms of product and services. And so on. All of these, cost money. And what we're trying to do, if you think about it, is we are trying to do all this and maintain a very good competitive and win rate and good position against our competition, while protecting the investors from fluctuation in this profitability line. So that's why we're keeping this range. That's why we're not getting so upset when it goes to 16.6 or whatever, or 20 basis points higher. And if it will cross 17 at one quarter, I would not have a celebration. It just within the fluctuation of the normal cost of doing business. But the bigger picture is that we are trying to do all the what I mentioned before, and compete in a very competitive landscape while protecting the investors, meaning not allowing this profitability to fluctuate too much. So that's kind of the big picture you need to keep in mind. And the answer is that eventually, yes, there's nothing in the company that prevents us to go to a slightly higher number, but that should not be the number one parameter, not even the number two parameter that we run the company by. I hope it's helpful.
And next we will take Akira Kilkowski with Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my question. I just have a few quick follow-ups and some questions on your prepared remarks. First, I wanted to speak a little bit more about the environment that you're seeing in North America. I think you sort of mentioned last quarter you were expecting more moderate growth rates for the region in 2014, and it seems like it's off to a strong start, and I'm wondering if this is, you know, I know you talked about it a little in your prepared remarks, but is this more a question of timing, or is it are you seeing a real improvement in the activity levels in this region? And then to follow up on the emerging markets, understand it's a lumpy, you know, project-oriented type of business, but should we look for acceleration in this region, or should we think of 2014 as more of a year of investment and implementation? Thanks.
So, Kyra, two great questions. Let me see if we can, you know, shed some light on that. In terms of North America, the problem is that on one hand, there are almost, you know, contradicting vectors. On one hand, you see higher competition, there is a higher need for our services and products and so on and so forth. That's within the, let's say, wireless mainly space. If now the consolidation in the market actually creating situation, they have fewer and fewer carriers. So we went from, I think, 7 or 8 carriers in North America to about 4 within 2 quarters, including Metro PCS bought by T-Mobile and Cricket bought by AT&T. And not all of them, you know, approved, but I'm assuming that it will all be approved. And then you have SoftBank getting into Sprint, and I can go on. And now we're talking about maybe start consolidation in the cable and satellite industry. You've seen Time Warner and Charter, and you may see others. So short term, all these activities create some kind of uncertainty. It may slow down some projects. People may say, okay, I'll save the money for after the integration, or get very creative about whatever they want to do with it. Longer term, I think it's actually good for the business, good for Amdocs. Specifically, not in all cases I would imagine, but I hope in many of them. So in North America, it really depends on the pace of these activities and what would be the philosophy of the post-merger of these companies, because companies can merge and stay, in terms of IT, backend systems, and so on, stay completely separate, or they can go to what was executed perfectly throughout the years by AT&T, creating all the time one company. So you have very different philosophies about IT consolidation, modernization, so on and so forth after acquisitions. So I'm just trying to give you the idea why it's really hard to predict the growth rate in North America. We predicted that the second half of the year would be a little bit slower because we had such a strong start of the year. But again, we don't really have a very clear crystal ball on that. In terms of the emerging market, we believe that, as we said, that this can be a growth engine for double-digit growth in the years to come. Not only this year or previous year or next year, but that's kind of the health of the market. But it's lumpy. So some quarters it grows, and some quarters it slows down, and then it grows again dramatically. It's mainly due to the fact that projects are either being delayed or executed, or the pace of conversion, stuff that are happening all the time, but in these regions, it's really fluctuates much more than you will see in North America and Europe. So I would imagine that we will keep see growth in emerging markets, both in Latin America and Southeast Asia and the developing APAC. And it will be a little bit hard to depict each one of the or predict each one of the quarters, but on an annual basis, I think it will be double digit this year and probably for the following couple of years.
And we will take our final question from Andrew Fleece with Robert W. Baird.
Hi, thanks for getting me in here at the last minute. Just quickly on free cash flow, the quarter was really strong. It's really your third quite excellent quarter on free cash flow in a row. Is there anything, I know you don't want to guide on free cash flow, is there anything later in the second half of this year that we should be thinking about in terms of either capital expenditures or working capital that would be unusual or different compared to previous years?
So I would say in general that we are tracking for the recent 12 months have been in earnings to cash conversion rate of about 130%. That's not a sustainable place to be at in a long-term basis, right? So we do see healthy opportunity to continue with the right collection from our customers. I don't expect any major CapEx expansion unless we win, any specific deal that requires some build-up of a data center that is meaningful enough, and then we'll come and explain it to you, and I'm sure you'll be happy about it. But given what we see now, I don't expect any unusual changes in the pattern of capital usage for the business. At the same time, we may see fluctuations and will not necessarily continue. For example, we talked about the fact that Q2 is the annual bonus payment. That's always has been the case. So there are changes from quarter to quarter.
Great. Thank you. And then maybe finally on Asia-Pac, I know you guys signed the five-year deal with PayTV. India and China have not historically been, markets where you've penetrated. Is there anything about this new deal or your recent PayTV deals that would make you think you could penetrate those markets, either medium term or longer term?
So, Andrew, it's a great question, but this one specifically is not in India or in China, so it's not really related per se. So that we can tell you that much. And we would love to share the name. These are strong companies, but we just have to respect the sensitivity. It's mainly strategic sensitivity. You need to understand that most carriers or MSOs see a major deal with Amdocs as a strategic vehicle in their competitiveness and their ability to grow the business in the market. So that's why many times are sensitive about the specific names. In terms of, in general, look, China we decided not to be involved in, and we didn't change our mind so far because we didn't find a way right until now to make money. And the intellectual property exposure is outweigh any potential that we see in the near future. In terms of India, we have some projects in India. It's not a huge market for us today. It's under consideration today. We believe there is a chance that there is a need, fundamental need, to the type of offering that Amdocs has, because again, even the Indian markets are moving more and more from land grabbing, prepaid, simple system to customer experience, more postpaid, more combination of prepaid and postpaid, more data. Young generation wants data and smartphones all over the world, including India. So it may change our direction in India, but it's actually a part of the strategic review that we are having as we speak. We have some projects, and we have nothing against business in India. Just that we want to be very cautious that we can make EBIT, make profit in these projects.
And with no further questions in queue, I would like to turn the conference back over to Ms. Liz Grossum for any closing or additional remarks.
Thank you. As always, thank you so much for joining us on the call this evening. We really appreciate your ongoing interest in the company, and we look forward to hearing from you in the next few days. Matt and I will both be available in the Investor Relations Group. Thank you so much, and have a great night.
And that does conclude today's conference. We do thank you for your participation, and have a great rest of your day.